Injured in a car accident? We cap attorney's fees at 30% of the first million. Any recovery above that is all yours. No recovery, no fees or costs. If another lawyer wants more, Lawyer Up 904. For accidents, injuries, and more, Lawyer Up 904. Jacksonville.
Into the Night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Lay around the shanty, mama, and put a good buzz on, right? For some of you, that begins tonight, in the words of the great Jonathan Edwards. Those of you who live in and around a shanty, the best to you. Whether you live in a plush million-dollar home or one of those, it's a great holiday. It's a holiday for celebration. Family, friends, food. I really feel for those who are alone. I think that that's awful. And the weather this week has kind of set that up perfectly. I mean, it's just sucked. There's really no other way to say it. Weather really affects me emotionally, personally, mentally. You can give me all the happy pills in the world. When we don't see the sun, I just fall into despair. And there's really no other way to say it. The good news is, though, this is Duval. And it's not like Chicago, where I literally went months without seeing the sun. The sun will come back, but I know for so many of you, man, you've been working hard, and you got that day off finally tomorrow, and maybe the rest of the weekend as well, and you want to get outside, and you want to do some good things, and unfortunately, Mother Nature not doing her part. Anyway, football, you can watch inside. Football is here. And it begins tomorrow night, three games in the NFL, an Egg Bowl, a Friday as well, then an incredible Saturday and Sunday, including the return of the Jacksonville Jaguars in action this weekend against the Baltimore Ravens, a team that is absolutely stout against the run. Can the Jaguars run the football? That is the biggest storyline, in my opinion, in this contest, outside of the fact that Lamar Jackson did not practice today. He missed the Wednesday workout because of a hip. And if you look at Baltimore, who played a week ago, they are beaten up. Three of their key defensive players today did rest. That included Calais Campbell, who, of course, had, 31.5 sacks here in 3 years. And you look back at Calais Campbell, and he comes in with 98 sacks. There's some talk that he could retire at the end of the year. That's a real good debate. We talked about it last night with Fred Taylor. I think Fred gets in 2024, maybe 2025. I think if I was a betting man, I would say 2025. You look at who's ahead of him, and it's no one. I mean, it's Frank Gore, who's 4 years away. It's Adrian Peterson, who's 4 years away. Ricky Waters is on the list as they went from, 123 to 28. As far as the semifinalists. And, you know, I think Fred Taylor is going to get his due, but I think it's going to take a little bit more time. You look at wide receivers where Jimmy Smith is, that's a longer situation for him. That's going to take 6 or 7 years, in my opinion. Pass rush ends. I think you'll see a couple get in this year, including DeMarcus Ware. But Calais Campbell, I think, is going to have all the extra, intangibles that are going to go along with it. Once the voting process does take place, the three best years of his career were right here. 14.5 sacks in 2017. He had 10.5 in 2018. He had 6.5 in 2019. And it was a salary dump. You know, they said goodbye to him. And, you know, obviously Jacksonville was in a rebuild. You know, in a perfect world, you could turn back the clock and say, if they stayed with Calais Campbell, where would this football team be right now? I mean, it was interesting during the Jaguars' bye week just to kind of watch all of these games and see all of these former Jaguars. It was amazing. And, you know, you look at the defense. You have Calais Campbell and Dante Fowler and Yannick Ngakoue and, you know, Daniel Okwale forcing double teams in New England against the Jets. And I'm watching Matthew Judon pick up sack after sack, and I'm seeing the Jets double team Okwale, for crying out loud. Jay Tufele. You got Quincy Williams. You got Damian Wilson. You got Miles Jack. You got C.J. Henderson, Jalen Ramsey, Rodney Harrison, Rudy Ford, Deshaun Gibson. This is off the top of my head. And these aren't guys who left as free agents. These are guys that the Jaguars either said, you're out of here, we're going to trade you, or we're going to cut you. And all of a sudden plays a pretty good defense. So a little bit surprised by actually – well, not totally surprised since I was aware they were still in the league, but particularly the guy like Quincy Wilson, Quincy Williams, just how well I thought he was playing this weekend. And, you know, that's one of the major storylines as well. Not necessarily for this game on Sunday, but for the final seven games of the season. What's going on with Jaguar linebackers? In the rotation now with Chad Muma's going to get much more burn. I haven't given up on Devin Lloyd. I think he's a phenomenal athlete. I still think he's got a chance to be really good in this league. Is it simply, you know, he hit the rookie wall, and that is to be expected? There's been some talk about, you know, perhaps putting him on the defensive line and asking him to sack the quarterback. Boy, I don't know if that's the way I want to go with him. You wonder if the scheme is wrong. Is this going to be a traditional 4-3 defense in a year where Muma and Lloyd are both, you know, two of your three linebackers? The Olowokan deal, in my opinion, is very similar to the three contracts that I think will be ripped up after this year with Shaq Griffin, Rayshon Jenkins, and Roy Robertson-Harris. The one credit that Trent Baalke does deserve is the way that these contracts are written. Regardless of years and money, they're basically two-year contracts where you can eat a little bit of dead money, but you certainly can recoup an awful lot of cash as well. I'd be very surprised if Fatu Kasi and Olowokan are here, you know, during the 2024 season. That's still a year away. But what does this mean now for the linebacker play? Was it a miss? You know, you could have plugged Quincy Wilson in right now, Quincy Williams in right now. For crying out loud, he could have handled one of those linebacker spots, and you could have gone out and drafted a wide receiver. You could have gone out and done something with perhaps another cornerback. They didn't. You know, they spent three of their first four picks trying to fix this defense, and it was a hot start for Lloyd. I think Walker has been average, maybe a shade above average. I think he's certainly better than what the national media will grade him as they'll look at sacks only. And Muma is finally getting on the field. I mean, Chad Muma did nothing for the first, what, 7-8 games during the season. So this all remains to be seen. And, you know, we'll see. The flip side, today they get Darryl Henderson. So they get a guy who is certainly physical at 5'8", 208. All right, here's a man who was a third-round draft pick by the Rams coming out of Memphis back in, I think it was 2017. Let's see, 17, 18. No, it was 2018. This is his fourth year. And he fell out of favor. They really have screwed up the entire running back situation. They don't know what's going on with Cam Akers. They had him back in 2 weeks ago. He had his best game last week. Sony Michel, of course, was there a year ago for the Super Bowl run. And now they say goodbye here to Darryl Henderson. But, you know, will he give this offense a little pop, particularly around the goal line? I think after the 28 carry performance with ETN, you could see a little bit of concern, maybe stress with Doug Peterson, in my opinion. And what I believe it was sounds like this. We're in a rebuild. I really don't want to run Travis ETN 24, 25, 26, 27, 28 times a game. It's just, we know we can do it, but I don't want to see it each and every week. And, of course, that was not the case the following week and 2 weeks ago now against the Kansas City Chiefs. But you need another ball carrier. I mean, Jamichael Hasty had that incredible, what was it, 61-yard run. But outside of that, he's averaged 2 yards a carry. He's not the answer. He didn't get his head turned around nearly in time when it was a dump down pass coming from Trevor Lawrence. Okay, you know, you could chalk that up as the lack of continuity and chemistry or whatever. Bottom line, he still didn't turn his head fast enough. My guess is that James Robinson turns his head fast enough. Travis Etienne turns around his head fast enough. Then he dropped the pass. I mean, that's it. You're gone. I mean, what else do you need to see? He's giving you 2 yards of carry. He doesn't turn around fast enough to catch a ball. Then he gets a play later and he drops it. I mean, this isn't Little League. This isn't Pop Warner. You make mistakes in this league when you're a guy like that and you're out of here. All right. Now, the transaction is John Miller. I hope he rented here and did not buy. He's gone, the well-traveled offensive lineman, and today is twofold for Jacksonville. Caleb on, Chase on. Imagine if the light was to go on. How about the light going on for Caleb on? Yeah. The light goes on for Caleb on. How about that for the remaining 7 games of the year? Caleb on, Chase on all of a sudden becomes a factor. And again, you make the deal for Daryl Henderson. But I've got to wonder about this. I think they want to, again, take away some of these carries from Travis Etienne late in games, okay? There's been a lot around here, particularly for those, whether they're members of the media or fans or anyone, and it's fine, but many have been like, oh, yeah, you know, moving James Robinson, it's a good move. You get a 6th rounder and, you know, it could turn into a 5th rounder. And the buildup is there, right? It could be a 5th rounder. People are like, yeah, yeah. Well, you used a 5th rounder this year on Snoop Connor. And he was a healthy scratch the first 7 games. He's been back the last 3. 2 snaps, 0 carries. This is where I have to come in, okay? You can't brag about what might be a 5th-round pick in the James Robinson transaction, and then at the same time, just totally dismiss the 5th-rounder that you selected this year, okay? I have a problem with that. And, you know, Hayes, Caroline, and I were talking about it today during our podcast, Death, Taxes, and Duval, which you can get by going to 1010XL.com. He showed some promise early. He had a horrible preseason. I mean, the preseason games, even though he was playing with guys and playing against guys who were no longer in the league, it was a very ugly look. I want to say he had 49 carries, and he averaged, you know, less than 3 per. It just was really bad, okay? But when you watched him practice, man, it looked like he had a little bit more than just be a goal line guy. It looked like he had a tiny bit of wiggle and could move a little bit, looked good in pass protection, showed softer hands than I thought. Now, he's been out there practicing, but to me, that is alarming, okay? What are you going to do here with Snoop Connor? Is Snoop Connor going to become next year's version of what we saw with Jay Tufele this year, with what we saw with Quincy Williams last year? Are you taking third-round picks, and in this case, a 5th-round pick, and they're just not good enough to make your roster? To me, that, again, I don't want to overreact here. And the only reason why I mentioned it is because there are friends of mine out there, or at least people that I rub elbows with, are like, man, they may get a 5th-rounder. What a great move for the Jacks. And it's like, this 5th-rounder here, he's doing nothing but eat and go to the bathroom in Jacksonville. I mean, that's it. He's doing absolutely nothing for this football team. And again, I hate when people want it both ways. I can't allow that. Sorry. All right, so that's that. Jaguars in the news today. Very winnable game. Baltimore's beaten up. Jacksonville's coming off a bye. This Ravens defense is very stout. Again, 86.4 yards. A game on the ground, but they don't have a lot of freakish ability on offense. You look at their skill positions, and outside of Lamar Jackson, they really don't offer up an awful lot. Mark Andrews is a very good tight end, but they're a physical team, both offensively and defensively. they're a football team that's going to beat you in the ditch, and they're going to beat you with their physicality. They're one of the few teams in the NFL that is actually in the top 10 in scoring offense and scoring defense. Defensively, they're 10th in pro football, 19.9 a game. Offensively, 24.8 a game. That's 9th, and I know that that's kind of mirrored by their performance last week against Carolina, where they only put up 13 points, and you know they had to come late in that victory. So we'll see. They're a ball-hawking machine, plus 9 in the turnover-takeaway ratio. Wow, 10 games in, and they're plus 9. Jacksonville had it at plus 7 early, then they kind of let it get away. The Jaguars come into this game overall plus 1 as far as turnovers and takeaways. So a real legitimate shot here for Jacksonville to get back on the winning ways. They're going to have to come out and play solid football early, try to grab some momentum here, have somewhat of a balanced attack, and will they be able to hold on against Baltimore? Going to be interesting. The money has basically stayed the same. It opened as Jacksonville around 3. It was a quick push to 4. That number has remained at 4 throughout the course of the week, and we're right here, at 6:15 on a Wednesday, and it remains at minus 4 for Baltimore. All right, Schmunez Vision, thank you to them. They bring us in with our opening comments each and every night, a family organization. They focus on personal high-quality medical surgical eye care. Dr. Catherine Schmunez, fellowship-trained in cornea, cataract surgery, all refractive surgery. If you have issues with your eyes, regardless of what they are, you need to make an appointment today, 299-2906 at Schmunez Vision. We're talking about more than 30 years of laser eye surgery experience. I wish I was a candidate. I'm not. I had surgery 8 years ago for a problem in my right eye. You may be. Can you imagine the rest of your life never having to deal with the strain of your eyes, whether it's driving at night or trying to read or see something on TV? It could be incredibly easily fixable for you. Just make an appointment today. It is Schmunez Vision, 299-2906, or go to schmunezvision.com. We on YouTube tonight, Dylan Denmark.
We are indeed. Go to youtube.com, search 1010XL, and you will see us live on Into the Night with Rick Ballou.
All right, comments on what I just said about the Jaguars, 641-1010 on the text line, brought to you by Lifetime Enclosures. We'll get to that from you on the other side as well. Let's talk some Florida State, Florida football, the very latest on both teams coming up as we go into the night.
Let's go into the night with Rick Ballou on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, let me apologize to Ronnie Harrison. I believe I said Rodney Harrison. So I want to correct that. But honestly, kick that around a little bit. You know, defensive players of this organization is cut or traded. Are they better than the defense that's here? I mean, you could put a Kwale and Tufele inside, Calais and Yannick outside, bring a Kwale off, move Calais inside and Fowler on the outside in pass situations, right? Damian Wilson, Quincy Williams, Miles Jack, Jalen and CJ on the corners, Gibson and Ronnie Harrison. And Rudy Ford is your nickel. Just saying. How about offense? Minshew, J-Rob, right? DJ Chark, Alan Lazard, Mercedes Lewis, AJ Cann, Andrew Norvell, Josh Wells, Kelvin Beachum. Just thinking out loud, I'm not going to put a guy like A-Rob in there because he left as a free agent. I believe every other guy I said, DJ Chark left as a free agent. My apology. I mean, a lot of those guys have just been told you're no longer wanted here. And they're playing some pretty good football in some other places. Hey, listen, I understand that you could do this with every team in the NFL. This isn't a pick on Jacksonville situation. It's not. But I am a little interested in some moves that this organization is going to have to make. And it's not new. okay? It's not like I just created these ideas. I yelled about it the entire offseason. I wanted offense, 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 and they didn't. They took defense. They took three of their first top four picks as defensive players. My point is you could have kept Williams here and drafted a wide receiver, okay? You didn't. And now here we are. It's week 12, and you don't know what's going on with either one of your two linebackers. You don't know if they're in the right position. You don't know if they're in the right scheme. That's scary to me. It doesn't mean I'm giving up on them. I'm just saying it's scary. And you have a guy like Pete Prisco on our airways last week saying, well, maybe you put more weight on Javon Walker, or on Trayvon Walker, and have him put his hand in the dirt. Well, maybe you put Devin Lloyd on the line of scrimmage and, you know, can he become a Micah Parsons? Prisco didn't say that. I put in the last sentence. Well, there's been a lot of trust, right? Trent Baalke doesn't need anyone over him. Shad Khan's got total confidence in Trent Baalke. Doug Peterson and Trent Baalke are best buds. You're making these draft picks, and am I wrong? Am I wrong about that? Are you like, pipe down, Baloo. Devin Lloyd's going to be fine. He's going to be – Trayvon Walker, it's going to come. Light's going to go on. Trayvon's going to be a double-digit sack. Chad Muma, he's going to run this defense. He's a green dot guy. By 2024, he's going to be running that. This may all come true. But I just see all these wide receivers emerging and great, you know, corners, and I'm like, wow. Unbelievable. You know, I mean, 10 games in, better team. They're close. But what are you really getting from these players? And how much of this is them? How much of this is the coaching staff? How much of this is the scheme? Is this going to be another year where Mike Caldwell is fired, and then all of a sudden that becomes the standard? Well, they're going to have to learn a new system. I really hope nothing changes on offense, because you have a different offensive coordinator here every single year. I mean, keep some stability here with Trevor and continue to build around Trevor and fix your offense first. You never should have spent all your resources on defense to begin with. You can't fix it all at once. It's impossible. All right, so Zach Wilson fired today, or benched today. And we talked about this yesterday. It was plus 400. He'd be the next quarterback who was benched. On top of that, it's Davis Mills who gets benched within a division. Davis Mills is 2-0 against Jacksonville. He's 1-17-1 against everyone else. Let me say that again. Davis Mills is 2-0 against Jacksonville. He's 1-17-1 against the rest of the NFL. He's benched. It's Kyle Allen. You know the latest odds that are out? They actually have Trevor Lawrence as the third quarterback as far as ratings to be the next one benched. Let me find it right here for you. I couldn't believe it. I was reading it earlier today. And Las Vegas typically knows exactly what the hell they're talking about. Vegas is on top of everything. Where did they come up with these numbers? What do they know that we do not know? I don't think there's a prayer that Trevor Lawrence gets sent to the bench this year. All right, Wilson was minus 175. He's off the board. Davis Mills was plus 400, off the board. Right now, it's Marcus Mariota plus 500. You lay down $500, he gets benched. Or you lay down 100, he gets benched, you get back $500. Number two, Andy Dalton, plus 900. Trevor Lawrence is number three, plus 1,200. This is according to, let's see here, sportsbetting.ag. Sent me the email today. Unbelievable. What do they know about Trevor Lawrence that we don't know right here in Duval? I don't believe he's going anywhere at all. It's Friday night, Florida State, Florida. Florida State is healthy as they've been all year long. That's encouraging. They got good news yesterday on their wide receiver, Johnny Wilson, who's got a wrist or a hand. He was very limited last week against Louisiana. as far as I'm concerned, this football game is all about running the ball, okay, for FSU. But you might want to throw a couple of home runs to Johnny Wilson. The guy is only averaging 3.3 receptions a game. He's 6'7". I need more. Win or lose, especially if they were to lose. If I come back in here on Monday and you find out that they only went to him like three times, that ends up being bad coaching. Michael Pittman, lower body. Don't know if it was a knee or hip. Took a big shot on a reverse. Sat out the remainder of the game. He's been returning punts. He is expected to go. Darius Washington is expected to go. So Florida State is healthier now than they have been all year long. And to me, it's pretty simple. If you can run the football against Florida, you win. Florida State's had, I think it's four consecutive 200 rushing games. They're averaging 217 yards a contest on the ground. They have three backs. They have a quarterback who is very effective when asked. And you look at the University of Florida, they're allowing 172 yards a game on the ground. It is a no-brainer. Florida State's strength is running the football. Florida's biggest deficiency is defending the run. It should be automatic in this game. Now, for Florida, you know, you go to the other side, and I've been asked about this all week, and, you know, the question is, how does Florida beat Florida State? There's two ways. Number one, you need enormous plays. You need massive takeaways. You need mistakes by Florida State, and you need Florida to capitalize on those mistakes. I'm talking pick sixes. I'm talking about strip sacks. Florida's corners are pretty good, particularly in man-to-man. That's why I want to feature, you know, a 6'7" Johnny Wilson and not throw a fade to a 5'10" Micah Pittman like they did in the loss to, I don't know if it was Clemson or North Carolina State. I honestly don't remember which particular game that was. But Florida needs to do that. You know, the other side is, Florida's, you know, they have all these injuries at wide receiver. What do they have, like five injuries right now
at wide receiver? And Pearsall's questionable.
Pearsall's questionable. Henderson is out. Frazier's is out. Justin Shorter is out. Bowman is out. Marcus Burke is out. Unbelievable.
And a tight end, Zipper's questionable, I believe.
Yeah. So the Gators are really beaten up here now, particularly at wide receiver. Florida's got a great tandem, okay? The very similar thing that we said here all September and into October about Travis Etienne applies for Trevor Etienne. Why doesn't this guy get more carries? He averages 6.1 yards a carry, okay? Montrell Johnson is their leading ground gainer, both for carries and as well total yardage. And then, of course, you look at Richardson, who, you know, honestly, if he plays his best football, could be the best player on the field. The question with him is consistency. And unfortunately for Gator fans, the lack thereof. He didn't run in the first half against Vanderbilt. That was really odd to me. It didn't make a lot of sense. He turned it on a little bit in the second half. And, you know, we've seen some of the games that he has had this year where he has been able to do some incredible things with his feet. He is going to have one of those type of performances if, in fact, they are going to knock off Florida State. Now, Florida State has seen quarterbacks that are somewhat similar to Richardson. Go to week two, right? Jaden Daniels, okay? Jaden Daniels, 16 carries, 114 yards for LSU against Florida State. And Kalen DeLoach, who's a very good football player. Florida State's linebackers are as good as they've been in years with him and Tatum Bethune. DeLoach has been asked to spy on these quarterbacks still. And he's really played well. Jaden Daniels, 16 carries, 114 yards. Malik Cunningham, 17 carries, 127 yards. Miami's third quarterback, okay? Ja'Kari Brown, 13 carries, 64 yards. They did a nice job, with Clemson, 14 carries, 26 yards in a loss. But if you look at the starting quarterbacks, Florida State has faced five, if you also include Garrett Schrader, who was far less than 100% when Florida State went into the Carrier Dome a couple of weeks ago. They have taken on five quarterbacks who can run. And a couple of them have had success. That is what you are going to have to get out of Richardson. He's going to have to play an outstanding game and become the game breaker. Complete some passes, but obviously get it done on the ground. Florida in this game, that is how they win. I mean, you want to put together these long drives. They honestly want to slow this thing down, especially with all those wide receiver injuries. If they can run the ball. And Florida State is good against the run. They're not perfect. Let me find the numbers here before the break. Talked about how bad Florida is against the run. They allow 171.5 yards a game. Florida State allows 138 yards. So if I was to say to you right now, okay, Gator fans, I'll give you 138 in the ground. Do you win? Would you take it? I don't think I would. I think in order to win this game, you got to get around 200 yards. You got to have some huge plays. You got to have a 60-yard run by Richardson. You got to have a game-breaking run by Trevor Etienne. It's absolutely possible. But if you're not a fan that has watched this team play week in, week out, they are better now against the run than they have been earlier in the year. Case in point, because Fabian Lovett has made that big of a difference. And Curse is now is healthy, or Verse, excuse me, the kid out of Albany, is as healthy now as he has been in quite some time. So what I'm getting at is there's no excuses available here, okay? I mean, it's not often where you can look, and the same applies for the Jaguars. Their injury report came out today, not one player on it. Jacksonville's as healthy as they've been all year. Florida State is as healthy as they have been all year. Baltimore's not, and the Florida Gators are not. But that's why you play the games. And we'll find out Friday night and Sunday, respectively. All right, we got much more to do with you tonight till 8. It's great to have you with us. My name's Rick Ballew.
Let's go into the night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Big hockey game tonight right here in our great state. That is in South Florida. The Panthers taking on the Boston Bruins. Puck will drop just after 7 o'clock. That is about, 25 minutes or so away. My buddy Danny Van Sickle has dropped by. It's always great to talk with him. He, of course, is with the Electrical Training Alliance, one of our biggest sponsors of Into the Night. How are you? Man, happy Thanksgiving to you and yours.
Thank you. You too.
How you feeling right now? The beloved huge game Friday night. I mean, I still can't get over the fact that they're playing on Friday night, and that in itself is weird. But how you feeling about this game?
Well, you know, first of all, you hate seeing it on the Friday night because you would think that it would carry enough weight where you wouldn't need to move it to Friday night to
right.
get the primetime audience, right? But the bottom line is both of these teams the last couple of years, if you look at the records and how they played, it's just not the same as it was. So if you have to ask yourself, would you rather it be another noon game on mm-hmm. a Saturday mm-hmm. with a gluttony of other great games? That's the first thing I think of. The second thing I think of, you know, it hasn't seemed to harm Mississippi State and Ole Miss.
No.
They play Thanksgiving, day after Thanksgiving, and I've seen LSU, Texas A&M play that game. I've seen Alabama, Auburn play that game. So, you know, you try to be positive, maybe start some kind of weird tradition if it turns out good. But bottom line is the teams, they just need to win, man. If you don't want to play on that Friday night and you want to be Saturday night, 7:30 ABC national game, win.
I don't care if they play on Tuesday if they win. I mean, that has no bearing as far as I'm concerned. It just, everything is so positive right now. You know what I mean? I mean, they're healthy. They're not committing penalties. They're buying in. They're coaching them well. They're great on third down offense. They're great on third down defense. They're putting together huge chunk plays. They had the most chunk plays of any team this year in college football. They're putting together well-established 90-yard drives. They're showing up and scoring and making it 7-0. These are things that we have not seen with this football team in such a long time at Florida State.
You're right, and they've really bought in, and the play is showing itself on the field. All of the indicators point at an FSU victory. Let's face it, Florida's not a very good team, and I'm not just saying that just because of the rivalry and my personal feelings about them. The record says that. You know, they got three conference victories, Missouri, Texas A&M, and it's just if you look at who they played, they only have one really good statement win, and that wasn't even in the conference. That was the Utah game at the beginning of the year, and I heard comments earlier week, throw out the LSU victory that Florida State had over them because it was the very first game of the year, and you can't really count that, and LSU, all right, fine, let's throw that LSU victory out, throw the Utah victory out, right? So if you throw that Utah victory out, Rick Ballew, on a Tuesday night, Wednesday night, I want you to tell me what Florida's best victory is if you throw the Utah one out. Not going to find one, right? So the thing is, though,
I was kind of hoping you'd throw out the Wake Forest game and maybe the Vanderbilt game and give these two schools a couple of extra Ws.
Gotcha. The thing is this. Anthony is special now. Mm-hmm. He hasn't played it. Everybody's well-documented how he is last week. Listen, man. Because of how the schedule is set up this year, I'm like you know, not only am I going to watch my team, I watch the other team. I watch them to root against them, but you still watch them, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's special, man. He has got everything that you could possibly – he's got everything that they want at the next level. He hasn't quite put it together consistently all year this year, and what you hope is that he does not put it together consistently on Friday night, because I will tell you if he gets to going on Friday night, you better have 14 points on him, and you better – I saw him come – even though it was still garbage time, it came down to a onside kick against Tennessee. He got him to within 7 against Georgia midway through the third quarter. He looked like a Heisman Trophy winner the very first game of the year against Utah. But he's had some very bad moments too. So if you're Florida State, you need to go into this philosophy. I don't know if it's a great comparison, but kind of like the Jags with Lamar. Listen, he's going to get his yards. Don't think that you're going to be Vanderbilt and you're going to hold him to 13 yards or whatever ridiculous it was. Listen, Florida has absolutely nothing to lose right now. They done made their bowl game, so they're not worried about getting that sixth victory. He has nothing to lose by just running, and running more. If you're FSU, limit him to, 60, maybe 80 yards on the ground. If you're a Florida State fan and he breaks off a 25, 30-yard run, don't throw the remote at the TV. That's coming if he decides to run. He is just way too good of an athlete. What you got to hope is that you hit him, and you hit him over and over and over and over again. You make it to where he doesn't want to run, and they got good backs too, but I would much rather take my chances with Montrell Johnson and Etienne going up against our defensive line than Richardson out on the edges getting out and busting off 20-yard runs.
Man, he's a big man at 240 pounds. He is fast. He is powerful. Florida, only 5-11 in their last 16 Southeastern Conference games. That's really pretty hard to believe. And, Richardson, it's all about his consistency. Here's the way I look at it. Friday night's his last game. He's going pro.
Yes.
And he's not going to – whether they go 6-6 or they go 7-5, he's not going to go to Shreveport. He's not going to go play in a bowl like that because his agent's going to say to him, listen, you could be the third quarterback selected.
Right.
All right? Don't risk injury. Forget about it. Start working for the National Football League. So Friday night, in my opinion, is the last game for this young man. And this, for me, Florida, where no one's going to pick them, they have an opportunity to really shock, I don't want to say the world because it's Friday night, let's say the state. They have an opportunity to shock this state to this week practice some plays that they haven't run this year, or maybe they've run them in practice but haven't used them in games. Some trick plays, deep balls. He's got a cannon arm. Granted, they're missing some top wide receivers. And you nailed it, though. This is a game where I honestly can see Anthony Richardson running the football 15 or so times. And if you can get the two backs behind him lathered up, That's the way that Florida wins this game, is by taking clock, staying on the field, and running the football at FSU.
It is. So what that means on the other side of the ball is that when you're FSU, you have to take advantage of your opportunities. They've done a really good job this year of coming out the gate, getting scores early in the game. Flip side of that is they've been losing the coin toss. So a lot of times the other teams have got it at the end of the first half and then scored on them again in the beginning of the second half.
Yeah, last four, first streak. Right.
That's right.
But that really hurt them in that three-game losing streak.
It does. Yeah. It did. And so what Florida State needs to do is they need to score. Normally when it comes to something like this, I would say throw the record books out. It's rivalry, yada, yada. But I tell you, I can't remember the last time that offensively Florida State has looked significantly this much better than Florida since probably the 2013-2014 team.
Yeah.
And you're talking 9 or 10 years. Florida State now, that they've got some dogs, man. They got athletes on the field that can run on offense. And I think what you're trying to do now is keep the pressure up on them. Score as much as you can. Realize your defense might give up a couple of scores. It's fine. They got some good athletes over there. They're Florida, for goodness sake. But you got to score, man. I tell you this. I don't see Florida State winning a 17-16 game more than I see them winning a 45-21 game.
You see that type of game?
Oh, absolutely. Because I think Florida State's offense now, they're in tune. And it's not that it can't be stopped. I just don't think Florida's defense is at a place where it can stop them at this point. But anything can happen. A strip sack, interception, miscommunication on a read. Florida's got some dogs on the other side. And if that athleticism shows up, you know, it can go bad the other way. You're hoping that all the practice, all the reps, Jordan Travis seems to be on the same page. But you know what? I'm like you, man. I don't want him to throw the ball 30 times that game. No. I want them to run, and run. I want to shorten the game. And I want to shorten it by busting off 30 and 40-yard runs with a very good offensive line and three very good running backs.
Yeah, this game should be over in about 2 hours because I expect both teams to just run the ball. Now, unfortunately, there could be a lot of penalties, a lot of injuries, a lot of reviews, a lot of stuff like that. But we'll see. And we also know that both these quarterbacks are going to spin it. Danny Vance,
Let me ask this. If Florida State does get up on him, you think Norville's got it in him to try to run it? Is he that guy? Do you think he would, or do you think he would just say, let's get our ball, let's get out of here, we win this game? Do you think he would just keep pressing and keep pressing if they get up big?
I think after being up 31-17 against LSU and on the goal line, and he had that trickeration, it almost cost him.
I know.
And then you look at 45-3 in Miami. The momentum with the flip of the quarterback this week and all the other stuff that's going on, all the momentum right now is garnet and gold. And you put up a number, a huge number. This continues. The flip side is you let this one get away and you lose it. I don't even know what to think about what's going to happen over there. But the answer to your question, absolutely. I think if the opportunity presents itself, he's going to go for it. He's going to try to act like Spurrier used to act back in the day. Danny Van Sickle with us, the Electrical Training Alliance. All right, only got a couple of minutes left. Jacksonville hosts Baltimore on Sunday. How do you see it?
Seem competitive, but, boy, Baltimore, they don't lose a lot of games, and they got a quarterback that they have tailored an offensive round. He's efficient. He extends plays when he gets out of the pocket. I was pleasantly surprised this past week that they didn't get boat raced out of Kansas City, and there was a couple of times, man, if they had just capitalized on some opportunities, they could have taken the league and really stood with them. But I think this week is going to be a hard road. I do. Listen, he's in the last year of his contract. He did not sign a new contract, right? So everything he's playing for now is for money moving forward, and I just got a bad feeling that he's going to feast on this team. The defense hasn't played particularly great. They had some good moments. And they played actually pretty decent this past week. I will say that. But overall, for the course of the season, Shaq Griffith, I just got a feeling that he's just going to feast on him. And if he gets a chance to chunk that ball down the field, he is. And when he goes to run it, I'm not sure that that Jaguars have people that can keep up with him on the edges.
Yeah, it's going to be tough to shadow Lamar Jackson. The good news, I guess, never won to promote injury, but he wasn't able to go today with the hip. The feeling is, though, is that he'll still be able to go on Sunday at 1 o'clock right here against the Jaguars. All right, Danny Van Sickle, Electrical Training Alliance, for our listeners out there, moms, dads, those who are in a midlife crisis, a change of a career, Maybe you're younger, you're considering going to school, maybe you just can't afford to go to school. Tell us about the Electrical Training Alliance.
Yeah, we're a five-year electrical apprenticeship program. Our students work full-time jobs with one of our contractors, and then they go to school two nights a week for 5 years. You know, we get asked a lot, you know, hey, do I have to find a job with an electrical company and then get to the school? We find you the job. We have immediate companies. We have over 10 companies that we use. We've talked a lot about Miller Electric and Cogman Brothers, but we've got other companies, J. Williams Industrial, Mardan Electric, there's Advanced Sickle Electric. So we have over 10 companies that you could work for, and regardless of what company you work for, you make the same amount of money as the other people that are in your class, and there are plenty of opportunities, and right now we can put people to work. We have unlimited opportunities where all of our contractors are needing people. We can put you to work before you get in the apprenticeship with one of these companies, and that way you can see what the electrical industry is about before you get in the apprenticeship.
And obviously college costs a ton. I mean, hundreds of thousands of dollars. The only thing you got to pay for here at the ETA, the Electrical Training Alliance, is your books.
Books and course fees. That's it. The tuition is taking care of you. The difference is you have to get accepted. You got to qualify. You have to interview. You have to get ranked high enough on your interview. And then you have to get accepted to the program. Last year, we had 400 applicants, 250 people interviewed, and we took less than 30% of those who's interviewed. So it's a very competitive process to get in. And that's why you don't want to wait and you want to get all your information in. But if you can get all that stuff in and get working for one of our contractors, you can really move up. And if you get accepted to the program, you can start your career off.
All right. How do the listeners get a hold of you? What's the best way to take care of everything?
Just go to our website, etajax.org.
etajax.org. Danny Van Sickle, happy Thanksgiving.
You too, bud.
Good to see you. Danny Van Sickle with the Electrical Training Alliance. All right, more on the Jaguars. Sean Osher joins me coming up on the other side from Jaguars.com. We have much more to get to as well on Florida State and Florida. You want to jump in, the best way to do it is on the text line. That is 641-1010, brought to you by Lifetime Enclosures.
Let's go into the night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Someone has told me to lay off the mushrooms, the 2381 did on the text line. I don't know what I did.
You were on a rant about who the Jags have let go. You said, am I crazy?
All right. Quincy Williams and J2Fele. So the guy wanted me off the mushrooms. Mushrooms, man. You know, it just makes you wonder whether it's mushrooms or how about an oyster? Who's the first person to ever be like, you know, we're talking thousands and thousands of years ago, but like, let's open this up.
See what happens.
Yeah, and take a bite out of it. An oyster. Now, I mean, oysters are like my favorite now, but, you know, it's been done forever. But same with mushrooms because so many of them are poisonous, so many of them make you sick, but I don't know. Maybe that's a conversation that we'll have after we bring in our good friend, John Osher, who is with us. He is the senior writer from Jaguars.com and joins me each and every Wednesday night at 7 o'clock. How you doing, Johnny?
Yeah, I've got to imagine, Rick, there was some ugly trial and error at some point. You know, I mean, you know, hey, watch it. All right, well, there goes Ted. Yeah, I mean,
reach out and take a pile of dirt and jam it in your mouth, you know, it's just like, let's try some dirt. Maybe that works, you know?
Yeah, that's so good. And even when you think about it, even like booze, at some point somebody had to invent booze.
Yeah.
And you had to get, there's some fascinating books on that, but I mean, it's thank God they did, but at some point they had to.
Well, I mean, today's booze, I mean, especially for those IPA guys, and I know, I think you might like an IPA. Every once in a while. Maybe. I mean, it's like, you know, like Uncle Surly's, you know, prison toilet water, IPA. Yeah. You can only get it in this certain part of the country, and you drink three sips of it, and you can't stand still.
Yeah, there's some IPA. I mean, I love IPA. I'm heading up to Strings right now, Rick, to probably have an IPA. But, you know, I would say that there are some IPAs. I'm not a pumpkin guy.
Right.
I'm not a pumpkin beer guy. I'm not a blueberry beer guy. I mean, there's some IPAs that I think go a little too far, but hey, they each their own.
Yeah, I can't do fruit in my beer. That doesn't work for
me. Yeah. I don't mind a nice orange tinge to it, you know, and it, And some of my IPAs that I really like are brewed with some fruit. But the blueberry, the raspberry, you know, my wife every once in a while have a raspberry beer, Rick, and I just can't. I can't go along with that.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting. So. All right. Jaguars-Ravens Sunday. Baltimore did not play particularly well last week, but they found a way through it, only put up 13 points. I think that's a little bit misleading because you can look at Baltimore, see 13 points, look at their skill guys, look at the injuries. Then you get through all that and realize this team is still ninth in the NFL. They score almost 25 points a game.
Yeah, they can score, and they just feel like a team. I hope I'm wrong. I think everybody kind of feels it a little bit. Lamar Jackson, who can run and who can create, that's given the Jaguars a lot of trouble. And it just feels like that matchup, maybe they've got it solved. But that's the one everybody's watching. And the thing I keep always looking at with the Ravens, I like teams that know how they like to play. Tennessee's always impressed me on that front. The Ravens know what they are. This is also a team, Rick, they've led by double digits in every game they've played this year. And they lost three. Remember how close they were? They lost to Miami, came back on them. The Giants came back on them. But they're really close to being undefeated. So this is a team that, to me, a young Jaguars team still trying to figure it out, unfortunately, 11 games in. It's a tough matchup. To me, this is the toughest matchup left on their schedule.
Okay, yeah, when I, you know, and it's interesting because they'll say, I think it was Football Outsiders who said Jacksonville had the third easiest schedule, and I was like, you got to be kidding me. I thought those trips certainly to L.A. and Philly and Kansas City were absolutely brutal, but now you're taking a look at least four of their opponents here. I guess, you know, you get Tennessee twice, you get Dallas, you get Baltimore. These are divisional leaders. These
are Jets are good, too. I mean,
yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
the Lions are hot. So mm-hmm. It gets tough down the stretch.
Yeah, it's there's really no gimmies here. All right, you know what? What do you make? It's kind of the storyline here midweek, heading into the game with, you know, Chad Muma now is going to get all of a sudden some burn, and he's going to rotate with Devin Lloyd. There's been a lot of talk about how they're going to use these two. What's your overall thought on what's happening there?
Well, I think Devin Lloyd, for the first 10 games, has shown he's a playmaker. He's got a knack for the ball. At the same time, it's pretty clear that there's some stuff that he's still trying to figure out in terms of trusting what he's seeing, reacting. It seems like Muma, you know, I think Doug Peterson talked a couple weeks ago, maybe it's the fact that Lloyd wasn't in, not training camp for a month. You know, maybe that sort of set him back a little bit. Still not completely picking up the defense. And Muma seems to be ahead on that front. It's not ideal because Lloyd was a first-round draft pick. You expect more out of that.
Mm-hmm.
But I also don't think it's necessarily something where you can write this guy off, mainly because you've seen many instances. I mean, he has a knack for making plays on the ball, and I think they've got to figure out a way to get him in a position to do that. And I'm not sure what the answer is. But I don't think it's time to write him off, and I don't think it's necessarily he's going to be out of the starting lineup the entire rest of the year.
Yeah. Darrell Henderson is picked up today, and he's a guy with a lot of starting experience in his 3.5 years with the Los Angeles Rams. I found it interesting, you know, a couple of weeks ago after the, 28-carry effort by Travis Etienne here against Las Vegas, that reading the eyes of Doug Peterson, he doesn't want that every week. I mean,
no.
20 carries, yeah, but 28 carries, there's a difference. And, you know, we haven't seen Snoop. It hasn't really worked out outside of that great run for Jamichael Hasty. So where are you with the addition now of Darrell Henderson?
Well, I think, first of all, you know, the question that I got a lot, well, why would you have this guy? You already traded James Robinson. Well, that was a mistake. But as we know, the James Robinson thing really felt like more of a long-term move. Let's get a pick for the guy. I absolutely agree with you. Doug Peterson said something a couple of weeks ago in a press conference along the lines of it's tough not to use ETN all the time because he's so good. When it's a crucial situation, you want him in there. I think Doug at the time, and probably the coaching staff, was wrestling with what we're talking about. He's so good. There's no scenario where you don't want him to play. So you've really got to watch yourself, and you've got to work to not overwork him. So I think you will see. I think you'll see Henderson play a lot compared to what the other backs were playing. I think you'll see him try to get 9 or 10 touches. I think they would like to keep ETN in that 24 on down total touches range, just because at some point you want this kid to be your guy for 4 or 5 years or longer.
Yeah. If this is a close game, and I think we all have every reason to believe that it is going to be a close game, that is what Jacksonville has done for their first 10. This is a very good Baltimore Ravens run defense. I mean, they're third in the NFL. They allow only 86 yards a game. So win or lose, it's going to be a great test for the Jaguars, Travis Etienne, and what they try to do on the ground.
Yeah, and Bucky Brooks on our Huddle Up podcast made this point. They are really good at what you say. So he expects them to, I mean, the Jaguars, to have a lot of short passing, to have a lot of have the passing game, the efficient passing game, you hope, be a big part of the run defense. I mean, the run offense, because it's very difficult to just line up, turn around, hand the ball to Etienne, and think you're just going to run all over him. So I would look for that to be sort of a part. Probably similar to some of the games that frustrated fans early when they were trying to get things going. And there's a lot of talk about run-pass balance. I think you will see them pass a lot in that scheme to try to get around that. And I try to use ETN where perhaps where the Ravens aren't expecting him as much.
All right, Johnny, final question for you. Many people believe this is the final lap for Calais Campbell. His 3 years here were unbelievable. He had 31.5 sacks. He's arguably a Hall of Famer. That'll be a conversation piece. He's got 98 career sacks. He's two away from that one century number.
Yeah, let's hope he gets it. I mean, he's a guy you just hope you hope good things for. And it's funny, I've talked a lot about Calais on different outlets this week. But what I haven't said is this. When you just said Calais, I just felt good inside when you asked me the question. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
And it's just what a good man, what a good player, Hall of Fame player, in my opinion. And if he had been in the right scheme early in his career, I think he's a lock Hall of Fame. Yeah. Once he got to this Jaguars team, it really clicked. I personally think he's eventually a Pride of the Jaguars guy, even though he was only here 3 years.
Wow.
If you think about the last 10 or 12 years of this franchise, who had a bigger impact at the time? You know, when he had those 4.5 sacks against Houston that day, that set the tone for the best things happening to this franchise in 11 or 12 years. I don't know if it'll happen, but I think it deserves to have conversation. This guy is a special story for this franchise and a special guy, and I'd like to see that happen someday.
John,
I'm not
always
saying next. There's guys who need to go in before him.
Oh, yeah.
But I think he should be considered.
Right, and certainly made a huge difference here, and everyone who's ever come across him really gushes about the type of human being he is. All right, Johnny, happy Thanksgiving to you and yours. Appreciate it. See you over there on Sunday.
Rick, thanks, buddy. We'll talk.
There he goes, John Osher. And you look at those 3 years, 2017, he had 14.5 sacks. He had 3 forced fumbles. He had a fumble recovery. He had 3 pass defenses. That's great. I'm sure those will, I guess those are they blocks, maybe would you call that, batted down balls? In 2018, 10.5 sacks, had a forced fumble and a recovery. In 2019, he had 6.5 sacks, 2 forced fumbles, 1 fumble recovery. This guy was, you know, we talk about small market a lot, and I don't know if Arizona would qualify as small market. I think that you can go to that whole East Coast, West Coast bias perhaps a little bit earlier in his career. But, you know, he was there for, I think, 10 years. And here's a man who's played 222 games. He has 98 career sacks. He's got 798 tackles. He has 15 forced fumbles. He has 12 fumble recoveries. He has 3 interceptions. We'll see if he ends up getting into the Hall of Fame. Certainly everyone is going, you know, let's just compare him to Jalen. All right, because if you look at the great defense here of 2017 and 2018, those are the two that you can make a case for the Hall of Fame, right? Jalen's not going to win any approval as far as being a great teammate, a great human being, okay? Good to the media, good to whomever. Calais Campbell checks every box. Calais Campbell was a phenomenal teammate. Calais Campbell is special to everyone that he meets. I mean, he just is really genuine. Superb with the media. You know, I talk about it often. We were in Baltimore when he was still a member of the Jags. And Leon Searcy and I was right by the team hotel. Remember, Jacksonville practiced out there for like 3 days before a preseason game. And Searcy and I were out in a steakhouse. We had already eaten a couple of drinks at the bar, and then bam, here they come, Josh Allen and Calais Campbell. And, you know, obviously I didn't eavesdrop or listen in on the conversation, but, you know, you could just see out of the corner of your eye that it was all Calais, and I don't know if it was a personal conversation, if it was a professional conversation, but Josh Allen as a rookie just sat there and absorbed it all and listened to Calais Campbell. And I can't imagine what it must have been like, even though he's been asked, and he was asked this week, what it must have been like for him to learn under a guy like Calais Campbell. Pride of the Jags, though? Mm-mm. I got to respectfully disagree. I don't think you can get into the pride of the Jaguars based on 3 years.
How long would you say?
Six. Yeah, 6 or 7. You know, I mean, let's say Jalen was a good guy.
Okay.
Let's say Jalen didn't fake a back injury and whine his way out of town. I think if all of a sudden you see that Jalen Ramsey is in the Hall of Fame, and then you look back and you say he started his career in Jacksonville, he went to Pro Bowls in Jacksonville, he was an All-Pro in Jacksonville, then it kind of makes sense to put him in because he is a Hall of Famer. That's never going to happen for the reasons that I just gave you. He worn out that welcome with the way that he lied to this city. But I got to think, I think there's a certain criteria that goes into that. Do you retire Tom Brady in Tampa if he only plays 3 years but he won a Super Bowl?
Absolutely not.
Okay. Some people would argue with you there. And I see that, you know, when I was a sideline reporter and I go to every place, I would look at some of these names and I'd be like, man, they retired that guy. They retired that guy. So, you know, it's there's not as much, I guess, as far as the criteria that obviously is held with the Hall of Fame. But I would think a minimum of, 5 or 6 years. How about you?
Yeah, I'd say 6 at the minimum. Although the way the new NFL is, I mean, you'd look at guys like Luke Kuechly. I feel like we're kind of going more to the trend and with free agency that some guys could probably play 5-6 years with their rookie contract and then leave and then play one more contract, and then I could see like that being their career.
I think next is Maurice Jones-Drew, and he played 8 years. He was injured in 2012. He only played six games. But you're talking about a career where he had 126 games did Maurice Jones-Drew. Ran for 8,167 yards, 68 touchdowns, also caught 11 touchdowns and nearly 3,000 yards receiving. That's 126 games. Again, we're talking about Calais Campbell. He played 3 years. So if I was told that it was going to happen, I wouldn't be, put it this way, I wouldn't be upset about it. I wouldn't, you know, be bothered. But I just, in my opinion, no. He just didn't play enough games here in order to get in, to have his number retired and hang there, whatever the hell they call it. What is it, the Ring of Honor?
The Raptors. Not the Raptors.
The Raptors? Yeah, Toronto Raptors?
Yeah. Yeah, the Ring of Honor.
Is it the Ring of Honor? Okay. I mean, all due respect, I just honestly don't know or had forgotten what the name actually is. Pound me if you want. do so on the web, on the text line at 641-1010. Like this guy who said, I'm on shrooms, man. Here's a guy now that says, what about a blowfish for the first time? Yeah, that'd be weird. Yeah, anything out of the sea would be weird, but I'm just thinking about stuff that grows out of the dirt. You know, how do you separate things that you know you can eat and that you cannot eat? Because a lot of those mushrooms will make you sick, even kill you. What's the old Jefferson? Is it the old Jefferson Star? No, it's Crosby, Stills, Nash, and Young when they talk about eating mushrooms and I haven't gotten sick yet once. Maybe we'll play that on the other side. 641-1010, best way to get to us, along with Dylan Denmark. My name's Rick Ballew.
Let's go into the night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
All right, it's actually purple berries, not mushrooms. I'd like to apologize again, but I'm not going to do it. I'm going to limit myself to one apology per show. But this is deep. You can understand why in a song like this they would pick berries and just kind of stare at the stars. The great wooden ships, Crosby, Stills, Nash, No Young. You know, Crosby, Stills, and Nash is in the Hall of Fame. Neil Young with them is not.
Really?
Neil's in twice. He's in with Buffalo Springfield, and he's in as a solo artist. But he's not in with Crosby's Stills and Nash. Thought I'd share that with you. Here comes the berry part. Turn this up. Purple berries, folks. Purple. There you go. I thought it was way back when people tried those type of foods, but not according to CSN. All right, injury report is out, and there's nothing there. Jacksonville's completely healthy. It's week 12. It's amazing. It really is. You look at Baltimore, the big story is the hip of Lamar Jackson. He did not practice today. So we'll see what gives for him tomorrow on Thanksgiving. Three key defensive players out today for rest. You look at Calais Campbell. He didn't practice. You look at Marcus Peters. He did not practice. And Justin Houston, a linebacker, did not practice today as well. So, you know, three members of the Ravens defense, three veterans with the Ravens defense, didn't practice today as well. Let's see here. Jalen Amar Davis, one of their corners, has a hip. He was out today. And I want to say that he is their nickel back, Jalen Amar Davis, because Marcus Peters is one of their starting corners. And, of course, the former member of the Alabama Crimson Tide, Marlon Humphrey, is on the other side. Let's see. Starting tackle, Ronnie Stanley, didn't give it a go today. He's got an ankle. Also, guard Kevin Zeitler wasn't able to give it a go today. He has got himself he was ill. So there you have it. Very latest. Gus Edwards, he's been out forever, right? The hamstring, the knee. I was looking at their running back situation. You know, this is a football team, honestly, that doesn't have superstars on the offense outside of Lamar Jackson. And obviously, the tight end, the very talented tight end, Mark Andrews. I mean, their backs are Kenyon Drake, Justice Hill, Mike Davis, the injured Gus Edwards. Those are the guys they have been going with. As well, you'll see that Baltimore is one of the few organizations left in the National Football League that will actually use a fullback at times. All right, the big story of the day is out of New Jersey. Zach Wilson benched. No accountability. And this is a great move for second-year head coach Robert Salad, because when you look at how bad Zach Wilson handled himself. And there is a report out now that Zach Wilson today did apologize to the entire team for the way that he handled the press conference. So I'm going to give him some credit here. Whether he figured this out on his own or someone got to him, his response after that 10-3 loss to New England can absolutely fracture a locker room. When your defense plays that well and allows only 3 points, and there's no accountability coming from your locker room, or excuse me, there's no accountability coming from your quarterback, this is a move that Robert Saleh had to make. He would have lost his team if he did not bench Zach Wilson. Defensive players would have gone in a totally different direction. So now you make the move. You're going to go to Mike White. They still have Joe Flacco. But the bottom line is this. Zach Wilson's 5-2 this year as a starter in New York. The New York Jets overall are 6-4. They're sandwiched in there with New England and Cincinnati. Those three teams at 6-4 fighting for the last two wild card spots in the AFC. Obviously, there's a ton of football left. There's 7 games left. But the move made by Saleh could end up being a very beneficial one if Zach Wilson actually does get away, practices hard, you know, is a decent enough guy, and then he gets another opportunity, whether it's late in this game this weekend, maybe it's next week, maybe it's 2 weeks down the road. But this is why it's so hard to be a coach, and you've got to know what decisions to make and what buttons to push. Again, if he did not make this move, and we've seen quarterback changes around here. You know, we saw the cut of Byron Leftwich and the announcement of David Garrard. And then we saw Blaine Gabbert, okay? And then we saw, you know, when it went, did it go, I'm trying to remember, did it go Henny? And then all of a sudden, it became Bortles. And, you know, the whole thing then with Minshew. And then, you know, even the debacle of a year ago where you had the rotation with the ones with both, you know, Trevor Lawrence and Gardner Minshew. You sit down a quarterback, that's something that the entire team is going to react towards, whether it's a positive thing or a negative thing. You have to do that with Zach Wilson. And that's what Robert Saleh did. So he keeps the locker room. Now we'll see what Mike White does. And if he doesn't perform well, then maybe they go to Joe Flacco. If neither one of those perform well, then you go back to Zach Wilson. But at least he was benched and he was disciplined, so you don't lose the team. You know, I also think indirectly, it's another great trait that you see here with Trevor Lawrence. Trevor never throws anyone under the bus. Trevor always, you know, takes the bullets. That's when you're the quarterback, you are the most talked about guy on your team. And you are looked upon differently. You are treated differently. You have to act differently. And one of the things that you have to do is to deflect criticism that is coming in, whether it's your offensive lineman who had a false start or a wide receiver who dropped a key ball. You as a quarterback have to be the one who takes on that responsibility. And when you do that, guys around you are going to end up playing harder for you. You know, the greatest quarterbacks in the league are that way. There are exceptions. I mean, we've seen Aaron Rodgers this year be pouty and blame others. You know, we see Brady get in someone's face on the bench or in the huddle. But on, you know, the flip side of Brady, you don't ever hear him publicly throwing one of his other teammates under the bus. Brady takes all that on. So, you know, with all the comparison, there were those who thought, yeah, Zach Wilson should be the top pick in the draft. Don't go with Trevor Lawrence. Trevor Lawrence and what he has shown as far as his accountability and the way that he handles things, whether it's a good thing or obviously if it's a bad thing, is totally different from what we've seen here with Zach Wilson. All right, also today, that's it for Davis Mills. He's going to the bench. Kyle Allen is going to get an opportunity now in Houston. So yet another draft pick from last year's class sent to the bench. Sam Darnold's going to start in Carolina. Okay, that has been announced. And it also looks as though Matthew Stafford, this one is absolutely injury related, but the season is over in L.A. I mean, you talk about a Super Bowl hangover. The Rams look just terrible right now. It's going to be Bryce Perkins, the kid out of Virginia, who I believe is going to be the starter over John Wolford. We'll have to see what decision is made coming up later in the week, but it appears as though Matt Stafford is not going to play quarterback. All right, when we come back, we got much more to get into, including a little bit more on Florida State, Florida, getting a lot of good questions coming in on the text line. If you want to add your 2 cents in, the best way to do it is 641-1010. That is brought to you by Lifetime Enclosures.
Let's go into the night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
All right, a little bit of anger going on this Wednesday night. I don't like it. It's all about love, right? Thanksgiving, family, friends, good times. I tweeted out a little bit earlier today. You can get me, Ballew1010XL. I said, all this Jags talk between Lloyd and Muma and them rotating, Quincy Williams was thrown away a year ago and is playing better than them both. Well, I've got a lot of reaction, both supporting that and disagreeing, which is always what I like. I don't want to constantly throw stuff out there that you all agree with and vice versa, which you all disagree with. I mean, that's the spirit of the conversation. I got one guy here, though, however, who said this. Ballew is the Jags media equivalent of cancer. We don't pay attention to him. The guy's name is Doofus McGlory, and he's got 10 followers, okay? So here's the deal, Doofus. I want to wish you a very happy Thanksgiving, even though you made really an awful comment. I can't only hope but laugh at it. I mean, I don't think there's not anything that I have not been called, okay? But the media equivalent of cancer, I have to believe, is the first that I've ever been. I've been told that I'm cancerous before with comments, but not the media equivalent of cancer.
That's got to be top of the list.
I'm going to save this.
Screenshot it.
Just look back on it. You know, I mean, I'm not one of those who needs negative comments as motivation like a lot of these players do. You know, that's always – there are two huge bores to me. Whenever someone wins at a national title, they always start with no one believed in us. No one thought we would be – I mean, Georgia could win the national title this year in college
Kirby
football.
Say it.
And you're going to get that.
Dabo says it a lot.
Yeah. The second one that always gets me is you can have – 100 columns written about you, and 99 of those columns are positive. Athlete's going to take that one negative column and tape it up to their locker and look at it every day as fuel.
The Michael Jordan.
And motivation.
Yep.
Anyway, that's, you know, it's honestly cruel, but I got to laugh at it. It's as simple
when,
as
when
that.
When people talk, like when they hate at you, do you usually laugh or do you just like go, do you get a chuckle?
I get a laugh at something like this. I mean, this is.
That is pretty funny.
I mean, again, you got to look at the tweet that I put out, okay? It's not like I'm calling for someone to be fired or, I mean, the tweet was this. All of this Jags talk between Lloyd and Muma rotating, Quincy Williams was thrown away a year ago and is playing better than them both. Now, you can totally disagree with that comment. That's fine. That's my opinion. That's what this show's all about. That's what Twitter's all about. And there are people out there that, my timeline, there are people out there who disagree with this. That's fine. This guy, Doofus McGlory, though, took it an extra step. Stereotype, not even stereotyping me, flat out branding me as the media equivalent of cancer. So, there you have it. All right, final moments. Let me do this. Let me go through a couple of games, all right, because we're not going to be able to make our picks as we normally do tomorrow. JJ and I will make them off air and keep the totals. But, you know, there's some big-time games coming up, rivalry weekend. For the record in the NFL, I think Baltimore wins, okay? I think that they are a field goal better than Jacksonville on Sunday. I am going to Tampa in the morning with my girlfriend, going to stop off and see my my mom in assisted living. Unfortunately, she's not going to be able to be with us for Thanksgiving, so that's very disappointing. But I am going to get with my dad and my brother and his family, so it's going to be a good day in Tampa. And then Friday, it's a Noles day. Playing golf with my brother, former Noles quarterback Peter Tom Willis, and some others. And then it will be the game coming up on Friday night. I do think Florida State wins this game. The money is now moved to 10.5. It's all coming in on Florida State. It's petrifying. The money's on Florida State. The tickets that are being written are all on Florida State. So you and I both know that the general public typically does lose. We'll see what happens here. I like Florida State to win the game. I do. I'm not going to, I don't bet anyway, but I would never lay 10.5 points, because if you give me a 1-point victory right now, I like the Noles over the Gators. Have you picked a winner for this game yet?
Oh, Florida State.
Okay.
They win this game.
Some other games of interest. Michigan-Ohio State is going to be absolutely electrifying, as it always is. Ohio State favored by 7.5. And, you know, who gets the benefit of the doubt if it's a tough loss? Does a higher-ranked team losing at home, who has more street cred, in my opinion? Even though Michigan beat Ohio State a year ago, I think when you consider what the voters are doing, I think more of the street cred right now is still with the Buckeyes than with the Wolverines, because Ohio State, if you look at their body of work, let's say over the last 5, 6, 7 years, it's still much better. Remember all the struggles that Jim Harbaugh had against top 10 teams and certainly against Ohio State. So I wonder how that works, because traditionally you'd be the lower-ranked team, lower as far as numbers-ranked team, Michigan at 3, a 7.5-point underdog. Let's say they lost by a field goal, there'd be a little bit more credit given to Michigan. I honestly wonder if that comes into play. And my point being, next week's Big Ten championship game for Ohio State or Michigan, whoever wins, it's basically going to be a laugher against like a 7-4 team. Who knows, maybe an 8-4 team after Saturday. You wonder if the team that is left behind, if there's enough that they still get in as an at-large team. In order for that to happen, they probably need other scenarios to take place, like South Carolina knocking off Clemson. All of a sudden, to me, that becomes, honestly, that and Vanderbilt, Tennessee are two games now that I really do not have a good feeling for. Clemson was rolled by Notre Dame. Clemson was impressive again last week. They've won 40 in a row at home. South Carolina looked like the worst team in the SEC 2 weeks ago against Florida. They looked like the best team in the SEC last week against Tennessee. Anything can happen at that game. South Carolina, I believe, also catches a break. They get this at high noon, as opposed to it being, you know, under the lights where the crowd would be a lot rowdier. That's my opinion. Auburn, Alabama, won't be much of anything. Be interesting to see if the Lane Kiffin news does come up that day. Of course, the Egg Bowl is actually tomorrow night. Bama's a 3-touchdown-plus favorite. I don't think there's going to be really any theatrics in that one. Oregon-Oregon State is interesting. Right now, it looks like it's going to be USC-Oregon playing for the Pac-12 championship game. To me, that's the best game of the day, arguably. Notre Dame at USC. USC favored by 5.5. I love their game the other night against UCLA. If they can win this and then knock off Oregon, how can you keep USC out? Seriously. That's what's making this thing all interesting. Michigan State needs to win at Penn State. Probably won't get a lot of love around here because it's Big Ten football. You see that story today with Michigan State?
Yep. 7 players.
Well, 7 players suspended, but also apparently there was a $100,000 check that was...
Yes, it was the athletic department sent it to Mel Tucker. and it was supposed to be sent to his assistants and his staff, and he kept the entire money.
He cashed the $100K.
Yeah. He said, thank you.
The guy's got like an $80 million contract. He got a $100,000 bonus that I guess was supposed to be spread out amongst the staff. He just said direct deposit. That went straight into his bank. Anyway, I thought that was hilarious. Came out a little bit earlier today. They need to win in order to become bowl eligible. And bowl eligible means something for classes like that, schools like that. It means something for Miami, right? That's a game that no one's talking about around here. But as far as I'm concerned, this will be one of the games that I'll be watching on Saturday night, because Miami is 5-6 and Pittsburgh comes in with a record of 7-4. It's in Miami, and the Canes are a touchdown underdog. If Miami wins, they get to go to a bowl. And for Mario Cristobal as a rookie coach, 15 more practices is absolutely important. I mean, ask yourself that right now as a Florida State fan with Mike Norvell. How much more important do you believe it would have been for the Florida State program to get those 15 extra practices in those first couple of years to reshape your program, rebuild your program? So, that's basically it. LSU, Texas A&M is a game I'm going to watch, only because Texas A&M with two losses, I mean, that's really driving a lot of college football fans crazy, how they're over Clemson, how they're over USC, teams with one loss. LSU needs the roll here over Texas A&M. It's always a lot of fun to watch Jimbo Fisher lose. And, can LSU pull off the big upset next week against Georgia? So there you go. Rivalry weekend.
You think it's upset Saturday? I have a feeling it's upset Saturday.
I think we're going to – I think absolutely. No question about it. First off, I don't even know how to handicap Vanderbilt, Tennessee with a hooker injury. I don't know how to handicap South Carolina, Clemson.
I think Notre Dame beats USC.
I'm going to go the other way. I'll take USC there. I do hope Florida State knocks off Florida. Thank you, Dylan Denmark. Happy Thanksgiving to you.
You as well.
Thank you to Johnny Osher. Thank you to Danny Van Sickle. Hackers coming up right now. I'll talk with you next Sunday morning with the Jaguars, and then Monday, 6 to 8. My regular show. My name's Rick Ballew. A happy Thanksgiving to you and to your family.